This is Audible.
HiBridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Brain Food, The Surprising Science of Eating for Cognitive Power by Lisa Moscone, PhD. Read by Nora Tochi. Preface. A few years ago, I delivered the keynote at an international conference on the prevention of Alzheimer's disease. It was a beautiful sunny day in Italy. The lecture hall brimming with doctors, students, and laymen, all eager to hear the latest on pharmacological treatments for Alzheimer's. I was much less eager to be the bearer of bad news. Unfortunately, current medications for Alzheimer's lessen symptoms for a limited amount of time, but cannot stop the damage that aging and disease cause to brain cells. A new generation of disease-modifying drugs is under development, but clinical trials have yielded mostly disappointing results so far, confirming what everyone knew: there is no cure in sight. At which point, someone in the audience asked, "How about olive oil?" My neuroscience-trained brain was baffled. Olive oil? Olive oil was not in any of my research proposals, or in any way part of my education. I got my PhD in neuroscience and nuclear medicine to focus on the genetic aspects of the disease, motivated in part by seeing its devastating effects on my immediate family. My work for the last 15 years has been focused on the early detection of Alzheimer's. Specifically, in my research, I use brain imaging techniques, such as magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, and positron emission tomography, PET, to look at people's brains in relationship to their genetic backgrounds, and in doing so, learn about their likelihood of developing disease. This work led me to direct the Family History of Alzheimer's Research Program at the NYU School of Medicine back in 2009. The program focuses on the children and family members of Alzheimer's patients. Everyone there has broadly the same concern. Am I at risk for Alzheimer's? And what can I do to make sure I don't get it? Over the years, I experienced a change in the kinds of questions I was asked by our patients, much like the olive oil question at the conference. Beyond the discussions about genes and DNA, sooner or later, the conversation turned to food. What should I eat to keep my brain healthy? While all my research draws on my education as an adult, everything I associate with food comes from my upbringing in Florence, Italy. Back in my hometown, I developed a heartfelt appreciation for wholesome, healthy food from a very young age, which I took for granted until I moved to the United States to study for my PhD. I had not anticipated the challenge of finding a flavorful tomato, or the artery-clogging danger hidden within a seemingly innocent chocolate chip cookie. As I struggled with my own diet in my new environment, I learned from my research that I was not alone. By their own accounts, more than half of my study participants reported only trace amounts of vegetables and fruits in their diets. Little by little, it became clear that I wasn't just far from home. I was also far from the original thesis about the genetic aspects of dementia. In fact, it turns out that the role of genetics in Alzheimer's and dementia in general is not as major as we previously thought. While some patients carry aggressive genetic mutations that cause dementia, for the vast majority of the population, risk is influenced by a variety of medical and lifestyle factors, including a person's diet. When my research revealed how important and how oddly neglected diet and nutrition had been in the field, I went back to school and completed a third degree in integrative nutrition. I drew upon that and other work to found the Nutrition and Brain Fitness Lab at NYU, with the goal of identifying lifestyle factors that support the brain's health, safeguarding it against dementia. A few years later, I initiated the brain nutrition coursework and began teaching at the NYU Steinhardt School's Department of Nutrition and Food Studies. Around the same time, I moved to Weill Cornell Medical College, where I have the honor of serving as the associate director of the first Alzheimer's prevention clinic in the country. The clinic's innovative approach includes pharmaceutical as well as behavioral interventions aimed at improving both medical status and lifestyle choices in an Alzheimer's preventative way. Diet and nutrition are a big part of the practice. Altogether, this work has led me to dive headfirst into the complex relationship between our brains and the foods we eat, and to educate the public as to how to eat healthfully for their brains. As with anyone who has ever gone down a dietary path toward optimal nutrition, I quickly realized that the available advice was often conflicting and incoherent. But as a scientist, I was above all surprised at the volume and effect of pseudoscientific information available on the internet, especially in comparison with how little had been published with the rigor of peer-reviewed medical journals. We've heard a lot about what is and isn't good for our brains. For example, many of us have recently become aware of an American gluten panic. But only a few years ago, grains were considered the epitome of eating healthy, and people were terrified of eating fatty foods. The problem is that while many of the recommendations you can find online promote a scientific worldview, very few have been substantiated by sound research. The internet and media in particular have a tendency to make broad extrapolations on limited findings and sensationalize everything. For instance, at least once a week, someone will ask my opinion on the latest miracle drug for Alzheimer's. I'll look up the study. More often than not, it's true that the drug worked, but in a population of 10 mice. So that's great news if you are one of those 10 mice. Whether or not those findings are relevant to people is a whole different story. This is where scientific literacy comes into play. Which sources of information are the most credible? How can we know if the study we heard about in the evening news is worth acting upon? While sound scientific research is more limited than internet blogs, results do prove to be consistent. A new generation of studies has begun to identify which nutrients are particularly helpful in enabling our brains to work at the max, as well as protecting them as we age, thereby granting us continued mental strength over the course of a lifetime. At the same time, we are also learning which nutrients are harmful to the brain, negatively affecting our cognitive abilities and increasing the risk of mental deterioration. This includes my personal experience, accumulated over years of hands-on research regarding the important interactions among genetics, nutrition, and lifestyle. What's important to note is that I'm not just presenting the results of my own research, but rather the analysis of hundreds of scientists who have been studying the relationship between the foods we eat and the health of our brains over the decades. I'm hoping to make clear that science is never a result of one person's opinion, but always involves a collective of doctors, scientists, and even you, the population itself, in an ongoing educational exchange that unfolds over time. Thanks to this worldwide dedication, we challenge one another to get to the bottom of those things we're most determined to resolve. In fact, the beauty of science should be strength in numbers. The danger of looking at isolated papers is that you might find that what appears to be fact in one study is proven wrong in the next. One day you read that, according to science, you must avoid cholesterol at all costs. Then you turn around to find another equally scientific, explaining the role cholesterol plays in supporting a healthy brain. How can both things be true? Ultimately, no single study is perfect. One can never be absolutely sure that its findings are valid and applicable to the population at large. We need to look at a bigger picture. The more an independent study replicates a specific finding and insists upon applying a wide range of methods to an equally wide number of patients, the more likely that the finding is actually true and applicable to everyone. Make no mistake, there is a bottom line when it comes to what's good for your brain and what's not. In Brain Food, I draw on my background as a neuroscientist to bring a neurological and nutritional framework around the ways that food is specifically vital in promoting optimal brain health. In the sections that follow, we will get down to the details of what science has discovered so far by exploring neuronutrition, or nutrition for the brain. We'll look at how food breaks down into nutrients and to what degree these nutrients feed our brains. We'll talk about how the brain actually works and the specific influence diet has on our cognitive performance. But mostly, we'll see how the human brain has its own unique diet, different from that of the rest of the body. Just as we would eat differently to slim down than to train for a triathlon, when optimizing for long-term cognitive health, the brain has its own demands. As it turns out, our future lies in our own hands, and what's on our menu. Step 1. Understanding neuronutrition. 1. The looming brain health crisis. The good news. Let's start with some good news. We as a human race are living longer than ever before. Life expectancy has been steadily on the rise for over 200 years. During the 20th century in particular, there has been nothing less than a downright boom in human longevity. This dramatic increase in life expectancy ranks as one of society's greatest achievements. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, while most babies born in 1900 did not live past age 50, life expectancy now averages just under 80 years old in most industrialized countries. It turns out that the secret behind our recently extended lifespan is not due to genetics or natural selection, but rather to the relentless improvements made to our overall standard of living. From a medical and public health perspective, these developments were nothing less than game-changing. For example, major diseases such as smallpox, polio, and measles have been eradicated by mass vaccination. At the same time, better living standards achieved through improvements in education, housing, nutrition, and sanitation systems have substantially reduced malnutrition and infections, preventing many unnecessary deaths among children. Furthermore, technologies designed to improve health have become available to the masses, whether via refrigeration to prevent spoilage, or systemized garbage collection, which in and of itself eliminated many common sources of disease. These impressive shifts have not only dramatically affected the ways in which civilizations eat, but also determined how civilizations will live and die. In the end, we are living longer and longer lives. In most industrialized nations, old age is now a reasonable expectation. So much so that scientists are adamant. An older society is here to stay. That's good news. News that is hard won over the millennia of the history of humankind. The not such good news. Now for the flip side. As it turns out, to some degree, we might be victims of our own success. Unfortunately, this increase in lifespan has not necessarily provided us with additional years of particularly high-quality health. Old age can come with wisdom, but it just as regularly arrives with some less illustrious additions. Hearing loss, bifocal glasses, slower reflexes, and common medical ailments, such as arthritis, rheumatisms, and respiratory problems, are examples of those side effects we'd rather do without. What is of greater concern is that deterioration of the brain sneaks up on many of us as we age, making us vulnerable to memory deficits and loss of cognitive function. Over the years, I've asked countless patients, "What concerns you most about your future health?" More often than not, it wasn't the condition of their heart or even the risk of cancer that came to mind. Today, the greatest fear for most people is that they might end their days battling dementia. The most common cause of dementia, and probably the most feared, is the memory-robbing Alzheimer's disease. The idea of losing track of one's own thoughts, or being unable to remember our loved ones, is cause for great anxiety, fear, and stress. Equally daunting is our inevitable grief at seeing a relative or close friend suffer from this devastating disease. This concern is understandable. Of all the challenges to aging in the 21st century, nothing compares to the unprecedented scale of Alzheimer's. According to recent reports from the Alzheimer's Association, the number of people living with Alzheimer's in the United States alone is an estimated 5.3 million. As the baby boomer generation ages, the number of patients is predicted to reach a staggering 15 million cases by 2050. This is the population of Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago altogether. A similar trend is observed planet-wide. Today, more than 46 million people live with dementia the world over. This number is estimated to increase to 132 million by the year 2050. Further, while Alzheimer's represents the most recognizable and most common framework for dementia, there are many ways a healthy brain can go awry. Other forms of dementia, Parkinson's disease, stroke, depression, and so forth. As more countries reap the benefits of longer lives, the burden of all these disorders is reaching an alarming proportion. If that weren't enough, beyond specific disorders, general age-related cognitive impairment might affect 3 to 4 times as many people, with extraordinary psychological, social, and economic consequences. As we take in the challenges of such an unprecedented brain health crisis, the year 2050 doesn't seem so far away. We need a cure, and we need it fast. The breaking news. Now for the news that provides us with hope. Recent medical breakthroughs have radically changed our understanding of aging and disease by showing that the brain changes leading to dementia unfold over decades before anyone ever forgets a name or loses their keys. These findings have revealed a much more complex picture than previously imagined. Two technologies in particular have deeply changed the way we understand brain aging. On the one hand, we finally have access to cheap genomics, affordable DNA testing, which allows us to take an important peek into our genetic predispositions. While just 5 years ago, we would have had to spend thousands of dollars to do a proper genetic screening on patients, today, anyone can obtain such precious information for just a few hundred. In addition, we have lab tests, such as brain imaging, that allow us to view how the brain is functioning over time. In response to both our genetics and our lifestyle choices, scientists now have access to sophisticated brain imaging techniques such as magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, and positron emission tomography, PET, which allow a view of the human brain from the inside out. Brain imaging has given us a rare and opportune window from which we can catch a glimpse of the actual progression of many brain diseases years in advance of any noticeable clinical symptoms. Finally, we can track the development of diseases like Alzheimer's as they unfold and use that knowledge to identify people at risk many years, if not decades, before clinical symptoms emerge. As you'll notice, a large part of the discussion around nutrition for brain health references Alzheimer's. This is primarily because Alzheimer's is one of the few neurological diseases reaching epidemic proportions that scientists can agree is influenced by diet, and as such, it is the instigator for much of the funded research in the space. In order to figure out what people need to eat to improve or maintain optimal cognitive capacities, we need to compare people who age gracefully, from the brain's perspective, to those who unfortunately do not. In this context, Alzheimer's is, in effect, shorthand for the most extreme responses of the brain to the nutrients we provide. The lessons learned and behaviors to follow apply, therefore, to broader cognitive health as well as many, if not all, forms of cognitive decline associated with brain aging. In much the same way that following the guidelines to prevent heart disease is good for everyone, not just those at risk for cardiac events, the newly discovered dietary strategies to prevent Alzheimer's are also those that optimize cognitive health overall, over the course of a lifetime and with benefits across the board. Research findings in Alzheimer's can then be used as a framework that stands in for cognitive decline of the aging brain as a whole. By using brain imaging, several teams across the world have been successful in mapping the development of Alzheimer's over time, showing how it occurs gradually in the brain and progresses over a 20 to 40-year period before clinical symptoms emerge. In other words, cognitive impairment is not a mere consequence of old age, but rather represents the end game of years after years of accumulated insults to the brain. What's even more disconcerting is that the brain changes leading to dementia can begin as early as young adulthood, and in some cases, even from birth. As it turns out, Alzheimer's is not a disease of the old, nor does it hit without warning. Currently, our understanding is that many genetic, lifestyle, and environmental factors can potentially damage the brain while one is still young, triggering a cascade of pathological events that ultimately lead to cognitive deterioration. Whether we're referring to the somewhat typical forgetfulness and mild memory issues that many people experience around age 60, or to the full-blown dementia and loss of independent function in older age, there is a long period of time during which brain changes can be underway without the disease yet causing any noticeable symptoms. If this sounds frightening, take heart. The key message from these studies, including my own work, is that this lengthy gap leaves a precious window of time to finally and thoroughly explore the power of prevention. There is increasing evidence that implementing the lifestyle changes described in this book has the potential to prevent Alzheimer's from developing and also to help slow down or even halt progression of the disease in those who are currently suffering from dementia. If that weren't enough, eating for your brain isn't just a powerful preventative against disease. It actually helps you achieve peak performance in every part of your life. Beyond the specific fears over any particular disease and toward a more general hope for better brain health over a longer life, this is a call to action. Anyone who is old enough to consider how their brain will remain healthy into old age is old enough to start making vital changes to address that immediately. Simply irreplaceable. Taking care of our brains is a lifelong process, mostly due to the very nature of our brain cells. In fact, our brain cells, or neurons, are literally irreplaceable. This is a major difference between the brain and the other organs in our body. In the rest of the body, cells are constantly replaced. Think about how fast your hair and nails can grow. But the brain lacks the capacity to continuously grow new neurons. While some neurons do continue to grow as we age, the vast majority stay with us for a lifetime, rendering them particularly susceptible to the wear and tear that naturally occur as part of the aging process. This is why diseases like Alzheimer's are so devastating. They deliver the final uppercut to neurons that can't be regrown. All of this means that we need to pay even greater attention to the health of our brain cells, since, by and large, they might very well be the only ones we will ever have. This is especially important given the limited insight we have as to what's going on inside our brains. Often enough, we don't even realize that our brains are suffering until an interior problem grows severe enough to produce external symptoms, such as loss of consciousness, hallucinations, or cognitive deficits. For example, it is not uncommon that people who suffer a concussion keep going about their business for hours or days before finally feeling faint or confused. For a more common example, many of us do not realize that our brains are running low on fuel until we become lightheaded and can't think straight anymore. Why is there such a disconnect between the state of our brains and our awareness of it? For one thing, we cannot see our brains, but even more to the point is that we cannot feel them. This is another major difference between the brain and the rest of our body. For all the chatter that goes on inside it, the one thing the brain is not very good at, letting us in on its own condition. This is not its fault, however. As opposed to everywhere else in the body, there are no pain sensors in the brain. As such, there is no way to feel brain pain. If someone were to touch your brain, you wouldn't feel a thing. That's why surgeons are able to perform brain surgery on a patient, even while the patient is still awake. Most people confuse having a migraine or a headache as pain generated inside their brains. How often have we said something like, "I had a migraine so bad, I thought my head was going to split in half." Expressing it that way is more literal than we realize. It is, in fact, our heads that hurt, not our brains. This happens when the muscles in the neck and shoulders, not in the brain, stay semi-contracted for a period of time. For example, after spending several hours in front of a computer. Such tension can also radiate to the muscles in the face and scalp, activating the body's pain sensors located there and signaling discomfort. This is what most people confuse for brain pain. Next time you have a headache, take a good stretch. What all this boils down to is that not only can't our brain cells be replaced, they can't even sound the alarm when there is a problem. As a result, we remain oblivious to our brain's health. However, there are several things we can do to help our neurons stay strong and avoid unpleasant surprises down the line. Our ability to intervene and change the course of aging and disease is made possible by the remarkable abilities of the brain itself. Hundreds of scientific studies have shown that the human brain is quite the fighter. A healthy brain can take a lot of punches before being knocked out, or in biological terms, before exhausting itself to capacity. Then, and only then, do symptoms occur. This is because the brain possesses its own reserve. Just as an auxiliary tank is to a car, the concept of brain reserve refers to the brain's capacity to perform in the face of ongoing attacks. Whether because of age, accident, or disease, if we let enough of these attacks stack up without care, our reserve will eventually be exhausted. Given this factor, a major clinical goal is to identify those people whose brains are silently fighting off diseases like Alzheimer's and initiate the preventative treatment necessary to save them from fully suffering their effects. Hearing this, some of you might be hoping for a quick trip to the pharmacy with a prescription in hand. Unfortunately, pharmacological treatments are limited. In the case of Alzheimer's, current medications lessen or stabilize symptoms for a limited amount of time, but cannot ultimately stop the damage Alzheimer's causes to brain cells. A new generation of disease-modifying drugs, engineered to act as a vaccine, is currently under development. But even the pharmaceutical companies can't guarantee that these drugs will be ready within the next decade. Meanwhile, clinical trials have yielded mostly disappointing results, confirming what everyone is loath to admit. Treating a patient once clinical symptoms have emerged might very well be too late. Pharmaceuticals are much more likely to work if applied during the earliest phase of the disease, well in advance of cognitive decline. But for the time being, no such preventative treatment exists or seems imminent. This begs several urgent questions. Are we supposed to wait for still undeveloped drugs to emerge from a lab somewhere? Do we have time to wait? Could there be an equally effective alternative to a pharmacological approach? Above all, what can we do to make sure our brains stay healthy and active, preventing brain diseases from ever setting in? Nature or nurture? Recent research on Alzheimer's has shed light over the role we ourselves play in determining the future of our mental capacities. As you might know, Alzheimer's is often thought of as a nearly inevitable result of aging, bad genes, or both. It turns out that none of these alternatives is actually the case. What most people don't know is that less than 1% of the population develops Alzheimer's because of a rare genetic mutation in their DNA. As we'll discuss in more detail later, the vast majority of patients do not carry any such mutation. So, for the remaining 99% of us, the real risk is not determined by our genes. This shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. Even diseases like cancer, obesity, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease in large part arise from the interplay of a multitude of genetic and lifestyle factors, rather than from a single genetic mutation. Likewise, we need to recognize that the underlying causes of most forms of cognitive decline associated with brain aging, although sometimes partly genetic, are just as often linked to environmental and lifestyle factors like diet and exercise. So for the majority of us, whatever risk we do have has less to do with our genes and more to do with how we live our lives. This is key in a very specific way. First of all, this indicates that our future and that of our brains is not beholden to our genes after all, but is largely dependent on the very choices we make. For instance, studies of twins provide fairly conclusive evidence that it is experience that molds our future, no matter what genes we possess. Research on identical twins is particularly enlightening in this respect. Studies of thousands of identical twins with the same exact DNA, but who grew up in different home environments and led different lifestyles, revealed that only 25% of their longevity was dependent on their genes. Therefore, it was their lifestyle, rather than their genetic inheritance, that had a much greater impact on whatever their risk ultimately was. These studies provide fairly conclusive evidence that it is experience that molds our future, no matter what genes we possess, and that it is those things within our control that can make all the difference, not only with regard to the quantity, but to the quality of our years ahead. In keeping with this, it was estimated that 70% of all cases of stroke, 80% of all cases of cardiovascular disease, and as high as 90% of all cases of type 2 diabetes in recent years were caused by nothing more than an unhealthy lifestyle. These diseases could have been prevented by simply paying more attention to dietary choices, weight modification, and physical activity. Importantly, there is recent evidence that addressing just a few of the risk factors for heart disease and diabetes could in turn prevent over a third of all Alzheimer's cases worldwide. These interventions ought to be even more effective in preventing or minimizing the less severe cognitive problems that naturally occur with age. The truth is, we have more power than we realize. The power of our personal choices often remains untapped because of conventional Western medicine's tendency to treat symptoms with drugs or surgery before considering less risky and oftentimes more effective approaches instead, like eating better. The brain-food connection. For decades, the medical community has recommended dietary management as part of the therapeutic plan for many conditions, such as diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. To date, no such recommendations exist for brain aging and dementia. In fact, many scientists and non-scientists alike are still reluctant to believe that our food choices might have something to do with the way our brains age or our risk of developing a brain disease. In part, this is due to the fact that historically nutrition has been glossed over in medical schools, as well as in most postgrad mental health programs. It is only in recent years that nutrition was granted scientific field status, and diet has been acknowledged as a legitimate means of protecting ourselves against brain diseases such as Alzheimer's. Little by little, scientists have come to appreciate the powerful connection between the foods we eat and our brain health. This very revelation has fostered a fast-growing body of evidence showing that we might very well be eating our way to dementia. What many of us have only begun to grasp is that the actual health and quality of the foods we eat has dramatically diminished. Animals are routinely fed growth hormones, antibiotics, and genetically modified GMO feed, which we in turn ingest when we make a meal of them. Chicken and pigs are fed poisons like arsenic as a preservative. Conventionally raised produce is showered in pesticides and chemical fertilizers. In addition to being toxic and depleting our soil of nutrients, these treatments drive our produce to grow larger and plumper in appearance, while disguising the fact that they possess an unprecedentedly diminished vitamin and mineral content. Additionally, chemically modified fats and refined sugar are routinely added to most foods. This is done not only to preserve the food's shelf life, but to deliberately increase our cravings for them, which in turn drives sales and profits. What has gone unnoticed until now is the discovery of how, of all the organs in our body, the brain is the one most easily damaged by a poor diet. From its very architecture to its ability to perform, Everything in the brain calls out for the proper food. Many of us are unaware that the only way for the brain to receive nourishment is through our diet. Day after day, the foods we eat are broken down into nutrients, taken up into the bloodstream, and carried to the brain to replenish its depleted storage, to activate cellular reactions, and most important, to be incorporated into brain tissue. Proteins from meat and fish are broken down into amino acids, which, among other things, serve as the backbone of our brain cells. Vegetables, fruit, and whole grains provide important carbohydrates, such as glucose, as well as the vitamins and minerals that energize the brain. Healthy fats from fish and nuts are broken down into omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids that make our neurons flexible and responsive, all the while supporting our immune system and shielding the brain from damage. Our brains, literally, are what we eat. Food as magic. Often scientists think of food as an assembly of calories and nutrients that have some specific interactions with human biology. If one follows that line of thinking, food found in nature would be indistinguishable from food made in industrial factories. But nature doesn't work like a factory. Industrial food reflects roughly 200 years of human innovation and research into nutrition, manufacturing, and optimization for human consumption. Natural foods, by contrast, reflect thousands of years of evolution and adaptation for life on the planet. When you put a blueberry in your mouth, for example, you benefit from all the effort and thousands of years of trial and error that the blueberry bush has placed not only into growing the berries, but also into protecting the future of the species, dormant in the seeds. Instead of risking the seed's survival on their own, the berries use their own defense system, which is composed of several chemical substances we humans refer to as nutrients. Those very nutrients we work so hard to industrially decant into pills and capsules. Some of these nutrients are vitamins to prevent the seeds from getting spoiled. Others are minerals to give them strength. Others still are sugars to give them energy. Additionally, plants produce a vast array of powerful compounds called phytonutrients, i.e., plant nutrients, such as the anthocyanins and pterostilbene, that have propelled blueberries into the news. Phytonutrients serve the important purpose of fighting oxidative stress and inflammation, thereby increasing the life of the seeds. They are also responsible for the berries' color, smell, and flavor. One reason those berries taste so good is that they are doing their best to attract the birds that eat them. That is because it is through the combination of the bird's digestion, flight, and excretion that the plant can spread its seeds far beyond its own territory, further safeguarding its survival on the planet. In the end, by making berries, the plant sets out to ensure life. By eating berries, we receive all the benefits of that effort. There is a magic to this. Without anything like intention or thought, without advertising, laboratories, or a business plan, berries have made themselves nutritious and delicious. But far from being supernatural, this is simply the magic of ordinary nature. In neuronutrition, there is an endless range of examples in which the nutritional whole, in its effects, is literally greater than the simple sum of its parts. In spite of what our minds might tell us when presented with a brownie, what our brains actually crave is the multitude of nutrients present in natural, biologically active foods. When the right nutrients combine in the right way, the same magic that builds the healthy berries comes to build a healthy brain. The proof is in the pudding. Could it really be this simple? Are you finding it all a little hard to believe? I certainly did once upon a time, but it was my very own research that convinced me otherwise. Let me show you how. One study, comparing brains on different diets, Mediterranean diet versus Western diet, shows the MRI scans of two healthy, dementia-free people following very different diets. Let's check out the differences between them. To the left, you can see the brain of a 52-year-old woman who's been on a Mediterranean-style diet most of her life. Not being a neuroscientist, you might not be able to recognize this at first glance, but her brain looks great. In fact, that's a picture of exactly how you want your brain to look when you're 52. First of all, her brain takes up most of the space inside the skull. The ventricles, those little butterfly-shaped fissures in the middle of the brain, are small and compact. The hippocampus, the memory center of the brain, is well-rounded and in close contact with the surrounding tissues. In comparison, the scan on the right shows the brain of a slightly younger 50-year-old woman who's been eating a Western-style diet for many years. This means fast foods, processed meats, dairy, refined sweets and sodas. The arrows point to brain atrophy, or shrinkage, an indicator of neuronal loss. As the brain loses neurons, the space is replaced by fluids, which show up as black on an MRI. As you can see, there are more black areas present in the brain that has been fed a typical Western diet than in the brain that consumed a Mediterranean diet. The butterfly-shaped ventricles are larger in the brain to the right, which results from the brain shrinking. The hippocampus itself is surrounded by fluid in black, as is the temporal lobe, another region directly involved in memory formation. These are all signs of accelerated aging and increased risk of future dementia. Of course, not all people on the Mediterranean diet have perfectly healthy brains, and not all people who eat fast food have brains that are deteriorating. But on average, people who follow a Mediterranean diet seem to have overall fitter brains than those on less healthy diets, regardless of whether or not they carry genetic risk factors for dementia. Findings such as these have led to a true and proper paradigm shift in medical practice, as an increasing number of experts now see diet as being as important to mental health as it is to physical health. In particular, there is mounting evidence that adopting a brain-healthy diet is key to maintaining optimal cognitive capacities well into old age, therefore delaying or even better, preventing the appearance of debilitating diseases like Alzheimer's. At the same time, eating well and leading a healthy lifestyle have the added benefits of reducing the risk and severity of other medical illnesses that also affect the brain, such as heart disease, diabetes, and various metabolic disorders. In the end, science is teaching us that our brain health is highly dependent on the food choices we make. Though genetics can predispose us to many forms of disease, we should also give ourselves a little more credit when it comes to controlling the health of our brains and bodies. What we all can and should do is be sure to take care of the brains we've been so gracefully given by nourishing them the best ways possible, which will naturally extend our chances of a longer, healthier life. 3 steps to nourishing your brain. The next chapters provide the information necessary to explore the promise of this alternate route to enhancing and protecting the health of our brains, while at the same time providing a guide for optimal cognitive fitness that applies far beyond any one disease or symptom. As we make our way toward this goal, my approach to neuronutrition provides 3 basic steps of care that you can easily incorporate into your daily life to enhance the health of your brain. The plan grows out of cutting-edge dietary concepts born of sound scientific research in neurology, biology, genetics, and nutritional medicine, along with the latest studies on food synergies and the microbiome. Step 1. The first step is understanding which foods and nutrients your brain needs for optimal nourishment. Building a brain-healthy menu is the most important thing you can do to help your precious brain reach its full potential. Additionally, keeping your brain active, physically, intellectually, and socially, is also crucial to ensure optimal cognitive fitness. Step 2. The second step is to improve and optimize your diet and overall lifestyle by following the general guidelines outlined in chapters 11 to 13. These are basic recommendations that anyone can adopt and develop, and in doing so, achieve far better brain health in both the short and long term. Step 3. The third step is finding out where you are on the spectrum of your knowledge and practices as related to neuronutrition by taking the test included in Chapter 14. This framework will help you reflect on where you stand in the process of nourishing your brain for the long term. Beginner, already started, or further along, where on this trajectory are you? What can you do to move forward on the path to optimal cognitive fitness? Custom-tailored recommendations are provided for each of these three levels, presenting you with a full diagnostic workup for your own level in particular. Via these three steps of discovering and embracing your customized blueprint, you will have integrated all that you've learned from this book to craft an optimal dietary and lifestyle plan that is good for you and you alone. Whether your goal is to boost your brain power for the long haul, minimize memory lapses, or cut your risk of Alzheimer's, taking these simple brain-enhancing steps will help your brain be at its very best for the years to come. 2. Introducing the human brain, a picky eater. Bones and barriers. In order to fully understand how best to attend to the needs of our most complex organ, the brain, we first need to take a glimpse into its inner workings. What it's like, how it works, how it came to be the way it is. As we'll see, the human brain is not only highly unique, but also quite rebellious, working in accordance with its own rules and even taste. Let's take a look, then, at this most incredible organ. From the perspective of a neuroscientist, the brain can be described through a series of superlatives. It is first and foremost the most vulnerable organ of the body. One would think that such an indispensable part of the body might have been made of indestructible materials. Instead, the human brain is quite soft. If you were to hold your brain in your hands, you would notice that it has the consistency of jelly. Thanks to the brain's containing a good amount of fat, its texture is delicate, rendering it vulnerable and easily damaged. Suffice it to say that it takes very little to harm the brain. So much so that Mother Nature considered it necessary to protect it with a skull, made of layers of thick bones, and to further swaddle it in several sheets of protective membranes called meninges. This convenient built-in helmet, with which we are all provided, is fairly sturdy and resistant, enough so that an accidental smack on the head usually produces little more than an ouch or a grimace. But seemingly harmless accidents like these would result in major brain malfunction or even death, were it not for the skull and meninges. Inside the skull, the brain is immersed in a bath of colorless liquid called cerebrospinal fluid, the very same fluid that looked black on MRI, without which our ever-so-delicate brain couldn't even support its own weight. This fluid keeps the brain afloat and also provides cushioning from shock caused by sudden head movements, let alone hitting one's head on a hard surface. This fluid is also responsible for brain clearance, the process by which the brain flushes toxins and waste away to keep itself clean and functional. The skull, meninges, and cerebrospinal fluid are all necessary to provide structural protection and support to the brain, thereby granting it the status of most protected organ in the body. However, external insults are not the only danger to an organ that is so easily damaged. It also needs to be protected from within, since many substances typically circulating in our bloodstream could potentially cause great harm to the brain. Nature saw to this by creating a special barrier that prevents these materials from entering the brain. As further proof of its VIP status, the brain is the only organ known to be granted its own security system, a network of blood vessels called the blood-brain barrier. The blood-brain barrier is the brain's final layer of protection. It is made of a wall of flattened cells knit so tightly together that the barrier is fairly impermeable, preventing anything other than those elements recognized as safe and useful from entering the brain itself. Think of the blood-brain barrier as a high-security government facility. Not unlike FBI headquarters, it sports monitored entrances and security guards at each gate. Some visitors are immediately recognized and allowed in. Others have to show their ID and pass through security equipment before being escorted inside. Still others are not allowed within even walking distance of the facility. This stratagem gives the brain total control over which substances are readily let in, which are allowed to cross only under supervision, and which dangers are to be kept at bay entirely. Day after day, the blood-brain barrier protects the brain against infections and inflammation by restricting the passage of foreign, potentially harmful substances, such as bacteria, toxins, and even some medications. At the same time, it exerts precise control over the entry of chemical messengers produced elsewhere inside the body that could interfere with brain activity, including some of our own hormones. On the other hand, all sorts of substances that are necessary for the brain to function are allowed to pass through the barrier without hesitation. What is fascinating is that the vast majority of substances that are allowed to cross the blood-brain barrier are fragments of the air we breathe, the earth we walk on, and the foods that grow within it. It is quite moving to think that parts of the very planet we live on, its rivers, valleys, oceans, and skies, are routinely becoming part of our brains with every breath we take and every meal we consume. Water, first and foremost, is a welcome guest. Water is always allowed to freely enter the brain, as are some gases like oxygen, which our cells need in order to breathe. And what comes after water and air? Nutrients. Proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, as well as vitamins and minerals, keep our brains functioning, promote cellular activity, and prevent deficiencies. Over the millions of years during which the human brain evolved to be what it is today, highly specialized, nutrient-specific gates developed in the blood-brain barrier to allow our most important organ access to all the nutrients necessary for its growth and vitality. Food for thought. The health of our brains and our capacity to adapt and survive is intrinsically dependent on our diet, and therefore our environment. In order to fully appreciate what an evolutionary advantage this represents, and how delicate the interaction between the brain inside us and the world outside is, we first need to look at how the human brain came to be. Biomedical research is giving unprecedented attention to the importance of applying an evolutionary perspective.